Okay, well, again, thanks for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be with you. Whatever your particular view is about homosexuality, I trust that we can all at least agree that we are living through a generation of change with regard to issues of sexuality and societal values. And the rate of change in this particular area of society is quite staggering. And it's hard to believe that less than 50 years ago, homosexuality was illegal in Britain. A time when countless men feared being arrested by zealous police wanting easy convictions, often, it is reported, for doing nothing more than looking a bit gay. It was at 5:50 a.m. on the 5th of July in 1967 that the bill to legalise homosexuality eventually limped through the final stages in the House of Commons. One commentator says, it was a battered old thing and in many respects shabby. It didn't even come close to equalising the legal status of heterosexuals and homosexuals. That would take another 38 years. It didn't stop the arrests. Between 1967 and 2003, 30,000 gay and bisexual men were convicted for behaviour that would not have been a crime had their partner been a woman. And in the light of the debate around the introduction of same-sex marriage, that seems like another world. But at the same time, helps us to understand the reaction of many. Society and attitudes towards sexuality have changed significantly in a relatively short period of time. And that's part of the context that we find ourselves in today. I'm sure, as we will note as we go through today, it's not really possible or indeed desirable to look at these four approaches to the subject of homosexuality in complete isolation. There will be inevitable overlap, and I make no apologies for that. In fact, I celebrate it. I should also point out that I've been specifically asked to address the area of society and culture. Although I hope I'm somewhat attuned to the societal context within which I minister in 21st century Britain, I am no expert sociologist. However, I thought it was important as well, as I begin to speak to you, just to give a brief thumbnail biography. I'm a person of privilege. I'm white. I'm male. I'm heterosexual. I'm 53 years of age. I've been married for 34 years. We met when I was 14, my first real girlfriend. We got engaged on my 18th birthday and married a year later. The day didn't cost us £12,000 or £20,000 or whatever it's supposed to be. And just in case you're wondering, 6 years later, our first child was born. And you will immediately have made judgments about me and my ability to engage with these issues. And we have to recognise that I will bring my experience and perspectives, and you will bring yours. I should also make it clear that I do not believe that my salvation rests on my sexuality, on our marriage, or our fidelity. That is firmly in the hands of my personal relationship with Jesus Christ and the gracious love of God. As a minister, I serve our Baptist Union as the Faith and Society team leader, and as such have been involved in trying to help our union to make a Baptist response, or indeed one might say responses, to the new Marriage Same-Sex Act 2013. In that process, I've become all too aware of how Christians are extremely polarized around the issues involved, and how in so many ways we often find ourselves with a contrary view to society, but that is not universally so. It's also my experience that sadly, it's one of those issues that brings out the worst in people in how they behave towards others. Whatever your view is about this issue, I'm confident that you would be shocked to read some of the emails that I have received from so-called Christians about homosexuality and marriage. And I do not mean that everyone who has written with concerns has done so aggressively, but many certainly have. As a Baptist Union, we've tried to encourage continuing conversations, as indeed all the major denominations have. And in the most part, for us as the Baptist Union, we've been successful in acknowledging serious concerns and values that people have. And we too have many, many different views on the issue. And again, I want to say, I celebrate that. I should also say that this is my own personal view and research. Not all Baptists would see it this way. And as a union, we've tried to remain true to our ecclesiology by challenging the local church and our ministers to discern the mind of Christ for its own mission and ministry, rather than a central body dictating policy on this or indeed on most other issues. I also welcome the opportunity to engage in conversation, and the educator within me wants to test that by pushing boundaries in debate. In other words, I trust that you will accept this for what it is, a work in progress. I do not claim that this is the definitive word, but the reflection of a ministerial practitioner who happens for a brief moment to be serving in a national office. Before I get too far, I also want to make the point that in my experience, this is not a debate between those who believe the Bible and those who do not, but of how Bible-believing Christians seek to respond to societal change. And it's true that many outside of the church point to the Bible as being the problem, resulting in what they would claim to be homophobic doctrines and policies within an institution that they have no time for. But it is also true that many who love and study the Bible and seek to live by its teaching as disciples of Jesus come to very different conclusions about what it may have to say about monogamous, committed, loving, and faithful homosexual relationships. And I'm sure that that's something which we'll come to in much greater detail later today, but I wanted to be part of the context in which I flesh out these reflections as well. In his presidential address to General Synod on the 5th of July 2013, the Archbishop of Canterbury said, "The cultural and political ground is changing. There is a revolution. Anyone who listened, as I did, to much of the same-sex marriage bill, second reading debate in the House of Lords, could not fail to be struck by the overwhelming change of the cultural hinterland. Predictable attitudes were no longer there. The opposition to the bill, which included me and many other bishops, was utterly overwhelmed. with amongst the largest attendance in the House and participation in the debate and majority since 1945. There was notable hostility to the view of the churches. I am not proposing new policy, but what I felt then and feel now is that some of what was said by those supporting the bill was uncomfortably close to the bone. We may not like it, but we must accept that there is a revolution in the area of sexuality and we have not fully heard it. There is cultural change that amounts to revolution, and we, the people of faith in the church, have failed to notice it, failed to engage with it, perhaps. Just because it is change, of course, is not necessarily mean that it's good. And we might need to reflect on its benefit. But the fact is that wider society appears to look at the traditional church stance and dismiss it as out of touch and irrelevant at best. And whatever our view, that should be a concern. For most people, the introduction of the Same-Sex Marriage Act is a matter of justice and equality. Fundamentally, for them, it's about the way that society honours and values loving relationships. That's definitely the way that the government introduced the bill. And for those people who see it as a justice issue, the stance against recognising homosexual relationships in this way, often associated with the traditional church view, is seen as capricious and unjust. Either I'm growing or this is shrinking. We need to understand why people think like that. It's a concern for me primarily because it becomes a missional stumbling block. There are many pastoral concerns too, and I have no intention of playing down those either, as I have far too often heard harrowing personal accounts of real lives damaged by uncaring, prejudiced attitudes and what amounts to lousy pastoral care. And that too is fundamental to missional endeavour and respect. And as the Archbishop said, some of the things we heard in the debate were uncomfortably close to the bone. I too listened to a great deal of that debate. I suppose that these days I get paid to do so. It's one of the few occasions that I've sat and listened to a televised debate like that. And it was a grim experience. And I don't necessarily mean that in terms of the outcome, but in terms of the content of the debate. And it made me personally feel so uncomfortable, especially in the way it represented the Christian faith. It has also been said that pastoral practice and missiological effectiveness are coloured by the way we respond to the issue. The church's response is, I believe, widely viewed in society as ungenerous, unkind, bigoted, and at odds with the message that is so often proclaimed, that all are welcome here. God is a loving God who accepts us as we are. It seems as if the whiff of hypocrisy is sensed by those beyond the church. And to offend against the British sense of fair play and tolerance may well seriously compromise our mission to reach everyone with the good news of Jesus Christ. You see, I think we face many challenges in the society that is our context for a life of faithful discipleship. Every year since 1983, the British Social Attitude Survey asks over 3,000 people what it's like to live in Britain. Compared with 30 years ago, the 2013 survey reveals British people are far more likely to be tolerant of one another's relationships and lifestyles. One commentator again suggests, on the basis of the survey back in 1983, it was hard to imagine a Conservative Prime Minister advocating gay marriage. Now, public opinion suggests that widespread acceptance of gay marriage and gay adoption is here to stay. When you look in the details of that survey, it shows that in 1983, only 28% of people said it was always or mostly wrong for a man and a woman to have sexual relations outside marriage. Now, just 12% say that this is always or mostly wrong, and an all-time high of 65% see nothing wrong at all in such behaviour. Even when a couple want to have children, only 42% think they ought to get married first. But the figures reveal that attitudes towards other parts of our personal relationships have become more conservative. And I found this quite staggering. But cheating on a partner is more likely to be greeted with disapproval now than it was 30 years ago. Now, 63% say that it is always wrong for a married person to have sexual relations with someone other than their partner, slightly more than the 58% who thought this in 1984. In terms of homosexuality, in 1983, half the public surveyed said that sexual relations between two adults of the same sex were always wrong. A figure that rose to 64% in the next 4 years in the wake of the discovery of AIDS. Then, only 17% thought homosexuality was not wrong at all. Today, these proportions are more or less reversed. Only 22% think that same-sex relations are always wrong, whilst nearly half, 47%, say that they are not wrong at all. 83% of the people surveyed now think that it is acceptable for a gay man or a lesbian to teach in a school, whilst 90% feel comfortable with their holding a public position in public life, a position in public life. And the figures are even more startling when you factor in the age of the respondent. It's not surprising, I'm sure, for us to think that those who are born in the 1940s are far more likely to be opposed to same-sex relationships, but only 46%, whilst those who were born in the 1980s are much more likely to be affirming, with only 18% thinking it to be wrong. In so many ways, this is a very different world from the one that most of us grew up in. And the differing attitudes of the generations, again, I think, brings particular challenges to Christian witness. There are many ways that we might track that change in terms of popular culture. And in the time available, I'll just limit myself to one. We'll go to high culture and British soap operas. British soap operas and their treatment of homosexuality in the characters and the storylines. One of the issues that society faced in the 80s was the way that homosexual lifestyle was portrayed by celebrity culture. It was so often portrayed as an over-the-top, in-your-face, promiscuous lifestyle choice, often associated with outlandish behaviour. We can all think, perhaps, of some of those characters of that time that we would know. And in many ways, it may have been an understandable reaction to opportunities that had never been possible previously, and it was not inconsistent with other less helpful aspects of celebrity culture that was let loose in the 80s. On the whole, the great British soap opera took up the challenge of confronting these issues, and they've played a significant part, I would say, in changing societal impressions of homosexual people and relationships. And they've been increasingly normalised into the context and into the storylines. It's perhaps hard to remember the controversy that surrounded the first gay kiss on EastEnders in 1989. One newspaper ran with the headline, "Filth, get this off our screens." Answers on a postcard as to which newspaper that was. And the actor, Michael Crashman, received a brick through his window. There were even questions in Parliament asking if this was the sort of thing that should be portrayed on primetime television, and called for the programme to be banned. A lot has changed since then. Who'd have imagined that only 25 years later, the same Houses of Parliament would see the introduction of same-sex marriage? All the major soaps have included numerous gay characters and many different storylines, sometimes including their sexuality and struggles that they encounter with that, but often simply as a part of the character involved in real life, or at least as real as soap operas get. So suddenly professional characters, like the vet in Emmerdale, Zoe, she was there because she was a vet, not because she was a lesbian. Later in Emmerdale, Aaron, the hard guy, the garage mechanic who was never slow to lash out with his fists to sort a problem as a bullish teenager, eventually comes out as gay and becomes involved with Jackson, who, following a car crash, is left a paraplegic. And what follows was a portrayal of love and faithfulness with no possible sexual content, which eventually ended with a moving portrayal of the issues surrounding euthanasia. And that story ran for months. In terms of church, Coronation Street brought the challenge of Sophie's story. Sophie, who found faith, was baptised as a believer on primetime television. Extremely well researched and presented, complete with testimonies and the works and a full immersion baptism. Later, within a year, she comes out as gay and, in a long-running storyline, is cast out of her church. The fascinating aspect of that storyline was how it was placed alongside her sister, Rosie, who was anything but faithful in relationship. But she was the one who was accepted, while Sophie, who struggled to remain true to her newfound faith, and her partner, was the one who was estranged. And the Christian press, who celebrated the fact that a soap opera had so carefully carried a long-running storyline of a journey into faith, ignored her struggles with her sexuality and faith. in interfaith engagement, perhaps, EastEnders again with Christian and Saeed, the son of the Muslim family, on the square. And so I could go on, but then you might think that I watch this stuff. Love them or hate them, British soap operas have done a lot to reflect and maybe form attitudes towards homosexual people and relationships. And this again was perhaps most clearly demonstrated in the opening ceremony of the 2012 Olympics. In Danny Boyle's extravaganza that showpieced all that has helped to form Great Britain, there flashed on the big screen for all of 1 second the lesbian kiss from a 1993 episode of Brookside. And with so many countries in the world which still outlaw homosexuality, that was quite a cultural statement of societal value. Something, of course, which John Barrowman took to a new level in the opening ceremony of the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow with his so-called Glasgay kiss. And whatever you might think of that, again, with 42 out of 53 Commonwealth countries still with laws and often draconian punishments for homosexual people, it's a powerful statement of changing societal values. And it's into this context that the present government began the process which was changed the way that society views marriage, perhaps. Early in 2012, I encouraged Baptist churches and ministers to participate in the government consultation on equal marriage, which ran from March to June 2012. If you followed the progression of the bill closely, you would note that there were several changes in the name for the bill as it passed through consultation, as it passed through the Commons and the committee stages. Equal marriage, civil marriage, often referred to, but also gay marriage, especially by those who don't want it. But the Act is now there. Marriage, open bracket, same-sex couples, close bracket, Act 2013. It cannot be equal marriage because it is not the same, not even in law. It cannot be consummated as law defines it, and you cannot file for divorce for sexual infidelity because, as the law defines adultery, it cannot happen. So this is the Same-Sex Marriage Act, which technically speaking broadens the definition to embrace same-sex couples. In terms of registration of buildings, part of the law, of course, in England and Wales, very different in Scotland, but in terms of the regulation and registration of buildings, it's a parallel track, an extension of the original provision, and it's only available if it is requested in the appropriate manner. Now, I have no way of knowing how many churches chose to respond to the original consultation, but overall, the government claim that that consultation generated 228,000 responses, which is a lot for these things. 53% were in favour, 46% against. In parallel to the consultation, a large petition from the Coalition for Marriage, of course, against the proposal, collected over 500,000 signatories. But it was on the basis of this consultation that the government introduced legislation to allow the provision of same-sex marriage by broadening the definition of marriage law. It's easy to forget that the consultation concerned provision of equal civil marriage and categorically stated at this time that it did not apply to religious groups. The Act, though, as it went through its stages, has made provision for some religious organisations to opt in whilst protecting others from legal challenge. And we must recognise, as people of faith, that this happened because some religious groups specifically asked for the opportunity to commit conduct ceremonies. Society of Friends, the Quakers, Unitarians, Liberal Jews. We as Baptist Union, amongst with many other denominations, were consulted on a number of occasions, not to challenge the bill as such, that happened in other ways, but to help the civil service to understand nonconformist congregations. You see, whatever your view on same-sex marriage, we must try to help each other and our congregations to think theologically about marriage per se. What is it for us? What has it been? And how has it changed? I would say that marriage, as we know it, is, by the grace of God, very different to how it has been through the centuries. Although many of our traditions hold on to a particular model that I'm certain we need to leave behind for good, marriage is understood differently today, and that's good and something that I'd want to celebrate. I'd also want to see it to continue to evolve and for us to leave behind some of the Victorian values expressed in so many of the marriage traditions. In fact, we might say that through the ages, marriage as an institution in society has been consistent only in the way that it has changed. And we do well to remember that marrying for love is a very modern concept. I found Adrian Thatcher helpful on this as he helps us to reflect on what marriage is or might be in our context, especially with the emphasis that he places on gift and covenant and the embodiment of divine love, a unity of body, mind, and heart. Qualities which, if we went there, are just as important in same-sex marriage as they are in traditional heterosexual marriage. If there are faithful couples who wish to commit in this way, so the argument goes, should we at least not think about what that might mean? But what is the role of the state? And I can only talk for a Baptist church on this one. Well, first of all, of course, Baptists and other nonconformist congregations do not conduct marriage ceremonies in the same way that the established church does. We are not, by the grace of God, a state church. I did not swear an oath to the state at ordination. And although the media, and I would have to say many Baptist churches and ministers, do not understand, we are different from Anglican priests in law because of the church and state relationship. Baptists have never had and will never have an obligation to provide marriage services in the same way that the established church does. We have an arrangement where our buildings can be registered for the conducting of marriage ceremonies under license from the registrar, and we do this according to the rites and ceremonies of Baptists. And this so-called privilege has only been in place for a little over 100 years. It was in 1898, 145 years after the 1753 Marriage Act, which of course is where most of our marriage law is found, that this privilege was granted to Baptists. The authorised person, who may or may not be the minister, is authorised by the registrar and not by the church, appointed by the church meeting, of course, because we're Baptists, but they act on behalf of the registrar. And again, speaking personally, I've never allowed myself to be an authorised person as a minister. I've had that role before ministry, but never since. I do not wish to be an agent of the state in any form. maybe as a Baptist, it's time for us to reclaim our dissenting and nonconformist heritage. And maybe in the light of the way we understand marriage today, we should consider whether it's appropriate for Baptist churches to offer any legal marriage at all. Luther said that marriage is of the state. The church may bless a union. Others have made similar suggestions, of course, and I think I'm with them as an option. But whatever our view of same-sex marriage looks like, it's certainly here to stay. And it's certainly part of the social landscape in which we live a life of faith today. With, I trust, a missional and a pastoral heart. We may not want to embrace it, but some will. And what is most important is that we take the time and the energy to listen to each other and at least try to understand the difference that there is between us in this way. Thank you.
Thank you.